Hi everyone. Hope you're enjoying the web track so far at this year's SharePoint conference. My name is Ethan Goresh, and with me today is my co-presenter Jeremy Kelly. And today's topic is all about using jQuery and Content Search Web Part display templates to create modern websites. Now, hopefully you all attended, or at least tried to attend, the SPC 019 session I presented yesterday with Alyssa Levitz. And if you did, you'd know that we've made really significant investments in SharePoint 2013 around enabling all web designers and web developers to be productive making SharePoint websites and using sort of the tools that they want to use, the apps that they want to use like Dreamweaver or others, and modern frameworks like JavaScript and jQuery and all those other ones that those people want. In particular, though, the reason for today's session is we wanted to go deeper on designing the display templates for content search web parts. In many ways, the content search web part is the single most important web part in a search-driven SharePoint 2013 site. And we're super excited about how it fits into that overall designer story to enable people to use modern frameworks like jQuery or CSS3 or others to make some amazing modern-looking websites. Now, let's talk a little bit in more depth about what we're going to learn today. So first and foremost, I want you to take away from this session that the display template framework lets you use the skills and tools you already know as a web designer, web developer to build great experiences. So leveraging CSS and jQuery, which is what we're going to show today, to build really dynamic experiences is incredibly easy. And one thing I'd like to note, while we're talking about jQuery in today's session, there's nothing unique about that particular framework that makes it work with display templates, but rather, we've made this framework possible to work with any tool set that you want. So you can build display templates with MooTools, Sprout Core, name your favorite, JavaScript or other framework here. This is all about being open to those web technologies. We're talking about jQuery today simply because that's the one we see with the most usage in the wild. And so we think it's the one that, again, most developers already know or want to know. Secondly, another experience that I'm going to show you in just a few minutes on the Contoso website is around refiners. Refiners are an incredibly powerful manifestation of building search-driven experiences. Using refiners, it's really easy to get that experience that you may have only ever seen on large sites like Amazon or Best Buy, where if you've got a large set of content and you want to give users a way to navigate through it, slice and dice, find the content they want, even though it's something you might have only seen in the past on high-end search engines, in SharePoint 2013, the Refiner framework is deeply built in a way that makes it easy to build powerful, interactive search experiences. And we're going to show you today some more about that Refiner model and the Refiner display template model as well. So I did briefly want to talk about a slide that those of you who were in my SPC 019 session already saw. But I did want to go through it quickly to set the stage for the overall design model in SharePoint 2013 and how these content search web part display templates fit in. So I'll really quickly tour through some of the stuff from yesterday's session. We still think that for all web designs, we'll start off with comps, those idea of visual, you know, graphic file showing you how different pages should look, where you can think about, you know, your branding and your what they call the, your red lines, your spacing, your fonts, your visual imagery. And once you like those get built by a web developer into HTML and CSS and JavaScript that are not bound to any content management system, but are implemented in the way that you'd want those things to work. In SharePoint 2013, and as you saw in yesterday's session, you can upload those directly to SharePoint. They will automatically be converted into working SharePoint master pages. We'll do those sort of core SharePoint tasks like putting in your constant placeholders, putting the ribbon in a useful spot, in a way that you can move around. And then the next step, of course, is adding in a lot of those SharePoint-specific controls to make the site really be interactive based off your real data and use some of those best capabilities of SharePoint. And, of course, web parts are an important part of that, and the content search web part, as I mentioned before, is probably the most important web part you'll want to insert. So that's the way by which you will get these snippets or these web parts onto your page via the snippet gallery. And then in today's session, we're going to talk all about the branding and styling stories of those specific elements of your site. And of course, in SharePoint 2013, as you guys saw in the keynote, notably marked by the Dreamweaver bug that has been seen and talked about, But you can use any tool that you want for this process. You can use Dreamweaver, you can use Notepad++, you can use Visual Studio, you can use Microsoft Expression Web if you want. Any tool that you want, we are entirely out of the tools business and really excited about it. So, before we dive into the mechanics of design, let's quickly catch up with the Gintosa Electronics site that you saw yesterday, demoed in the keynote, and that we actually built out from scratch during yesterday's SPC 019 session. And let me give you a tour of that site, and in particular, we're going to talk about where the content search web parts are in that site and where the refiners are, and that will be sort of the jumping off point for all the demos we're going to build today, which all start out with this mindset of you've got the Gintosa Electronics site that you all saw yesterday, and now we're going to add a bunch more dynamic, rich, interactive, modern behaviors to it. This is the homepage. That's not the surprising part. But down here, we actually have some content search web parts on the page. We have one for customer favorites, and we're going to customize that in just a few minutes. Another one under staff recommendations. And again, while you might not have thought of these originally as a search that a user's doing, right? When you think content search, you tend to think about a list of blue links, right, and with a text box above them. These are not that. These are context-driven searches that users don't think of as searches. They're really just a great way to present the data. Similarly, if I was to go to, let's say, the cameras category page, over here on the right, this is all a content search web part that's showing these six cameras. And similarly, on the left, this is the refiner that lets me click, and it behind the scenes updates a search query. But the key is that users don't think of this as search. Users think of this as I get to interact with a site, and it feels really fast, and it feels really modern, and search happens to be the technology powering all of that. So that's the backdrop for today's set of demos, and what you'll see are really taking this site as it exists and doing a bunch of really mind-blowingly cool things to make the site look even better. But before we do that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeremy Kelly, who's going to teach you guys more about how display templates actually work.
Hi, everyone. I apologize in advance if you get a reflection.
Hello?
All right. You'll note that's not a SharePoint bug. Just saying. Yeah, Dreamweaver. All right, so let's take a quick look at how these content search web parts actually work in practice with kind of a logical model. So at the top, we have what everybody kind of normally thinks of in SharePoint, web part, right? In this case, our web part really doesn't have a lot to do when we look at customization. Our web part is going to specify the query that we want to execute with search. It's going to specify the templates that we want to use. And it's also going to give our users a chance to kind of override some of our inputs that we're going to define as we go through our demos. The web part's going to get loaded with the page. So for each web part you put on, you're going to get the web part itself loading. You're not really going to need to go in and do any customization of the web part itself throughout the process that we're going to talk about. The next part is what we call the control template. And the control template is really what determines the layout of the items on the page. So in this case, you can see I've highlighted the paging controls. And that's really what the control template does, is just figure out what order to put things in, how you want them to flow on the page. You're gonna, again, get one of these rendered once per web part on the page. So for each time you put a content search, for each time you use the same control template, you're gonna get one of those. You're gonna get one, its JavaScript is gonna execute once. The HTML is gonna get rendered once. And then the items themselves are gonna pop in. They're gonna go a lot faster than I've shown on the slide here, but the item template determines how each item coming back from search should look. In this case, you can see we've got picture and text and other data coming back. These get rendered sequentially once per search result. So you can imagine when you're writing your JavaScript and the HTML, that's actually going to get loaded and executed once per item that comes into the page. So it's something that we're going to think a lot about in our demos. And lastly, we actually pop back out to kind of the control template level after all of the items render. And we'll see this in the code demos once we pop in, which will be very soon. Once the control template finishes, we actually get some events that pop that are going to be the magic that helps us do all the cool stuff we're going to do with jQuery and CSS. So let's jump right into a demo and see just how easy this is. So here's our website that Ethan showed us. We're going to go down to the bottom of the page here. We've got these three results coming back from search for customer favorites. And this is all right. I mean, it matches the theme of our site, but we want to add a little bit of sizzle to this to make it look cooler. So we can actually take a third-party plugin for jQuery and take one of our content search web part templates, our display templates, and make it use that instead of doing what it does out of the box. So we're going to just go in. If you saw Ethan and Alyssa's session yesterday, then they talked about kind of mapping the files, mapping the drive for where all of your design manager files live. The content search web parts all live in the design manager, the master page gallery. So we can very easily, let's take the list control here. I'm just going to copy and paste. Right? So I'm going to take one of our out-of-the-box templates, and I'm just going to paste it in a new copy. All right. File dialog is gone. All right. I'm going to rename this from control list, and we're going to call this control J show off. Now, as soon as I've done that copy, SharePoint in the background is creating a JavaScript file for us. You'll see that for every template you have, there's going to be two copies, an HTML and a JavaScript. You always want to edit the HTML file because you don't want to worry about customizations in the JavaScript getting overwritten. And the HTML is a little easier to work with. So we recommend that you always work with the HTML. Let's go into Dreamweaver and we'll start taking a look at what this template looks like. First thing we'll notice at the top is the title. The title is what's going to actually show up in the SharePoint UI when a user wants to put this on the page. So we're just going to update this. J show off live at SPC12. So now when I go to the dropdown to select my template, I've got a really friendly name. There's some other properties here in this block that you see kind of in gray. These are properties that will also show up in the editor experience within SharePoint. They're not really things that we need to edit at this point to do anything, so we're not really gonna touch them. There's a description in here, so if you want to give a friendly description for your template, you can do that. This is the main reason to start with an existing copy of a template, because you're gonna get the content type ID and a bunch of other properties that you don't want to try to figure out by hand. So by copying one of our existing files, you get all that working right out of the box. So let's slide down. First thing we're going to come to is a script tag. And so far, this looks mostly just like HTML. And then we have a script with this $ include language script line in it. One of the things that we're doing, even though we're calling this an HTML file, is SharePoint is doing a little bit of work. When it generates that JavaScript file, it's actually taking the contents of this HTML and compiling it effectively into code that SharePoint is actually going to render on the screen. So we're going to see a bunch of helper functions and some other stuff, but the layer of things we're introducing here is very minimal. We've tried to keep it as clean as possible so you can do what you're used to doing with HTML and JavaScript. So I'm going to actually paste in a reference here. I'm going to include a new line. So I'm going to copy, and I'm going to include the J show off library. So this is a third-party control that we got off the web, and I'm just going to add a reference to it right here. What this is going to do is it's going to tell tell SharePoint when our template loads that we need to pull that file in along with our own code. So I'm going to add also a reference to an external file that is one that I wrote. We're going to see in a minute has very little code in it itself. So The main reason I'm going to bring this file up, and we'll take a look at it, and you'll probably ask, why did you bother to make this an external file? You can put all of this code directly into those files that we were looking at. But I put it in the external file for a couple of reasons. One, if you have a large block of JavaScript that you're working with, it's easier to handle as an external file. It keeps your HTML display template a little cleaner. It also lets you get the full syntax highlighting of whatever tool you're choosing to use for your JavaScript. And you know, if you're using Visual Studio, then you get IntelliSense and other great features. So in this case, my JavaScript file is pretty short. I've got a single line here that is basically calling the JShowOff plugin, passing some parameters to it. So next, if we move down the page, we get to finally some actual real HTML here. We've got a div. This div is the most important div in our display template, because when SharePoint picks up this file, it's going to actually use the contents of this div as the thing that gets rendered on the page. So all of our customizations that we're going to do need to happen inside of this div. And if we looked at the structure when the page renders, this div itself isn't going to be there, but all of the things inside of it are. The next thing we're going to notice is some more weird comment markers and this hash underscore marker. This is our way of letting you actually include code directly in the HTML. Because we're compiling it to JavaScript for you, we're not expecting you to use script tags to include the code you want. We've introduced this marker that you can put inside of a comment block and then allows you to do whatever JavaScript you need to do. And we're going to, as we go throughout the day, we're going to see a little bit more details around those things. But I'm going to add one more line of code to this. And it's going to actually connect up our display template to the plugin that we're pulling in. It's going to actually wire up that code we saw in the other file. And this is going to be the add render context callback. And we're passing in this thing called onPostRender. If you've worked with jQuery, you're probably familiar with document.ready. OnPostRender is kind of the equivalent of document.ready for display templates. It's an event that's going to fire after all of the HTML has been output for our display template. So if we want to do cool things, then it gives us a place to connect up after we can guarantee that all the elements we need have been loaded. And that's going to be really important as we go. So I only have to do a little bit more to this to actually make it work, and then we'll swap back over to the page. I'm going to take this unordered list here. This is what's actually going to put those search results on the page. And I'm going to add an ID to it. I'm just going to say that this is the JShowOff list. And I'm going to replace its CSS class. I'm going to call it CBS JShowOff, just so we can make sure we override the styling. I'm going to hit save. Let's go back over to our page. So far you've seen me basically write a line of JavaScript, maybe two if you count the add context render. I've changed a little bit with the UL, but I'm still working primarily out of the box here. Now we'll go back over to SharePoint and see just how much we accomplished with that, you know, couple lines of code. So I'm going to go into edit the page. And I'm going to come down here and edit the web part. Load. And you can see here the properties for our content search web part. If you went to one of the sessions yesterday about working with search, they talked a lot about the query part of this. We're not going to really go into depth on that part in this session. But let's see here in the control template, here's our JShowOff live at SPC 12 template that we just created. I'm going to hit OK. I'm going to check the page in. Draft, get us a little more screen real estate. And all of a sudden down here, our three little items have got a little bit more snazz to them than they did before. So hopefully that's a little bit more eye-catching, attract customers to those items when they're looking at the page. And again, I really only added one or two lines of code to make that happen. So I went from out of the box, pretty plain display template, to full animation using a jQuery plugin out of the box. So I think that's pretty cool. I hope you guys think that's cool. That's worthy, all right? Let's cut back over to our slides and look at, so what did we see in that? The important things to take away from that really quick demo, we have an include script call that loads custom JavaScript. We write our customizations inside the first div. Our onPost render fires after the control and the item templates are done rendering. And something I didn't talk about, but I should have, we're using a jQuery plugin, and you didn't see me do anything to connect jQuery up. The reason for that is we actually put our jQuery reference in the master page for this site. We know that we're going to be doing a bunch of things with jQuery, and it's just easier to kind of bubble that up to a single point. It'll make controlling the jQuery version a little bit easier across the site, and generally it's a best practice that we put that in the master page rather than in the display template itself. We saw this took about 4 lines of code, and if we think back to our logical model, all we really did here is stuff that happens when the control template ends. We didn't really change the structure of the HTML very much. We didn't work with our item template, even though we got a pretty dramatic effect visually on the page. So that was great, but it's really only the first step, because what good are these search results if we can't actually bring in some interesting data that matches the scenario that we have, whether it's a product catalog or a knowledge center. It's all about the data that we actually want to show on the page. So how do we get that into the display templates? Display templates, in particular the item template, specify the inputs for the data. If we think about the kind of the item template we were looking at, you could see we had the title and the URL that title links to. The price was another one of those inputs. And even the thumbnail that's on the page was an input that is defined in our template and that we can control. To wire those up, the search managed properties are the thing that we use to get the data in. And we can specify them 2 ways. One is defaults in the item display template. And we're going to see in the next demo how exactly we do that. But basically, we define, as template writers, we're defining what the default initial properties that we want coming in are. And then our users can actually override those per web part. So in the property editor that we saw, there's a panel that allows our users to actually say, in my case, instead of description, I want detailed description to come in. And we can remap what property comes across. So let's actually see how that works. Let's swap back over to our demo machine. And we'll look over here at the staff recommendations tab. And staff recommendations, we want to do something that's a little bit more colorful, probably a little more interactive for our users here. If you saw Ethan's demo yesterday, you probably saw the little slider. We want the user to be able to hover over and get a little bit more information. It'll let us use some different image sizes and hopefully make it a little bit more attractive to our users. So let's see what we can do just out of the box. I'm going to come down here. I'm going to switch to my edit tab. Edit the web part again. And we're shipping you an okay number of starting templates. They're really good for building, and one of the ones that we ship is called the Large Picture. And Large Picture does some neat things, and we'll see it in action again after this demo. But let's see, all I did was change that template. What did it do? Well, we certainly got something very different looking. It's big. It's probably bigger than I want to devote to each of my products on the page, and the images that we're using from our product catalog don't really lend themselves to this aspect ratio, to this size on the page. The tower is cropped a little strangely. I like the way that this is going. I like kind of the fade effect that it's got. I like the idea of the way that it overlays the text on top of the image. But I think we can take this and actually make it a little bit better for our scenario. So I've pre-created a file that we're going to work with, and I created this one off of the out-of-the-box large picture template. So there isn't a whole lot of magic that I've done here that you haven't already seen. I added one of those on-post render calls. I've added some JavaScript references here that you'll see. And I'm introducing a new one here that I've added that's include CSS. So in the model we're creating, including CSS is basically the same as including JavaScript, right? So when you want to use external styles to make everything look great, it's really easy to include it. You don't have to learn a whole lot of different syntax. It's all basically the same, just a different helper function to call. So let's scroll down here and actually look at, we're gonna start with the HTML part of this. This is a little complicated, and we know that it's the sizing isn't quite the way we want it. So I've got a snippet here that I'm actually gonna replace that code with. And I'm gonna go right inside this container that I created, and I'm gonna paste it. And what have I got? I've got an anchor tag here. I've got a div with kind of the thumbnail, so where our image is gonna live. I've got this overlay that's gonna be kind of that transparent backgroundy color. And then I've got a data container where we're gonna put the information that we wanna pull out of search, the title, and I think we're gonna pull the price back in, because if you notice, we lost the price when I switched the template. That's just because the out-of-the-box templates don't predefine for the particular fields that we want. So we're gonna fix that as we go. One of the interesting things that's happening here, if you look, let's take the href here of this link. We've got another one of the hash underscore hash and hash underscore markers here. What this is actually doing is allowing our engine to replace right in line in the HTML of a JavaScript variable that we've defined up above. So we're making our HTML really dynamic by letting me do replacements in line with values that are happening at runtime. So I don't necessarily know for this particular item what the URL is gonna be. Search is gonna give me that data back, but I can actually plumb that code in to handle that for me without having to write, you know, many copies or have to define that data ahead of time. The other thing we looked at was kind of the image on that template. And we said that it was really large, and we didn't really like the way that our product images scaled to that aspect ratio. So if we look here, there's a line called here that's getting picture markup. So get picture markup, it's another one of our helper functions that we provide out of the box. Passing it a URL, passing it a width and height, and a CSS class. So what this is going to actually do, I'm gonna change this to be a square image that we're gonna want. We're gonna say 135 by 135 sounds pretty good. And what's gonna happen is when SharePoint requests the image, so the markup is gonna come back from this function, we're gonna put it into our page at runtime. The URL that it generates is gonna work with our image renditions feature that has been talked about in other sessions. Which means that we're gonna get an actual 135 by 135 image. We're not gonna get a big image that's scaled to 135, 135. We're gonna get an actual image that only has the page weight of needing to be that resolution. So if we're doing sites that are targeted for different devices, I can use kind of the intelligence of the image renditions feature to get the images that I want right in there. I'm also gonna replace the class that's on this image because I kind of want something that's a little bit more from my custom stuff, so I'm just gonna replace this property here. Paste in. There we go. Let's see, you know, we've done a little bit of work here. We've replaced our HTML. Hopefully we've simplified it a little bit from the large picture. Let's go take a look at what that little amount of work so far has actually gotten us. So we're gonna go in, we're gonna set this to be our custom template. Just gonna edit the web part again. And this time we're gonna change the item template. We're still using our list. We're gonna go sliding details, live at SPC 12. Let's see what we've got. And publish. Come down here. Ooh, that looks a lot better for my product images. They're bigger than they were originally, but they're not overwhelming on the page. I've got the title. I've got that cool kind of hover or translucent background that I really like. It's still not really very interactive, and that gray is kind of oppressive. So I think we can do better than that. But even with the little bit that we've done, we've already made a pretty drastic change to this template, you know, that we're fitting a lot more items on the page. It's getting a lot closer to what we want. And so we're in pretty good shape, but let's see what more we can do. One of the things we talked about was bringing in more data, in particular, the price of the item. So, you know, this is an electronic site. Customers probably want to know how much the products that we're trying to sell them cost. So up at the top here, there's a line for managed property mapping. And the managed property mapping is what tells the search, or what tells the web part to go ask search for the set of properties we want. So I'm gonna paste in here. Apparently when I look down, we get a little bit louder. I'm gonna paste in the price. So what I'm doing here is I'm saying, for this display template, I want an input called price. You know, this is an arbitrary string that I'm giving it that I want to use to refer later on in my code to get the value out. So I'm saying that price is the thing I'm gonna call it. And this ret base price is the actual search property that holds the data that I want. So you need to know a little bit about your search schema as you're developing these, because that's where your input values are gonna come from. But getting new data in is really as easy as just telling it, I want this property and I want it to come in. We can even, if we scroll over or look down a little bit, this one for picture URL, you can see it passes multiple properties that it wants. We could get publishing image, we could get picture URL, we could get picture thumbnail URL. What will happen in that case is the search engine will return the first of those properties that has a value. So if you know that you're working with multiple content types and they each have slightly different property names, but it's the same kind of data and you want it to work in your template, you can put all of the properties that you expect and it's gonna give you the first one that matches, which is pretty cool. You can do your own fallback really easily with this system. Thanks. I think that's pretty cool too. So we told search that we want that value, but we actually need to get it into a spot that we can work with it in code. So let's scroll down into our template. And you'll see a bunch of these lines here. We're declaring some JavaScript variables and then calling this helper function again called getItemValue. And at this point, I'm gonna paste in a line and we're gonna see this is where I use that name that I defined up above. So I've said I want price. What I'm doing now is using the JavaScript to get, you know, a JavaScript variable that has that value in it so that I can use it, I can put it into the div that we're gonna use. And it's really that easy. That's gonna do all of the work. Later on, we'll see, there are a bunch of other properties that come across with that. If you end up having to debug, this getItemValue returns a rich set of data about the thing that we asked for beyond just its individual value. Which is really handy when you're looking to see what you want. The next thing we're gonna do is I'm actually gonna define an ID for the div. So we're gonna add a div for our price in just a sec. Let me scroll here. And I wanna actually use this encoded ID variable that we've created. The reason we do this is gonna give a unique name, a unique ID to this particular item. So if you think about how this is getting loaded by the engine, we talked about how the items get rendered once per item on the page. So if you put 5 items on the page and they're all named the same thing, when you're trying to do a CS or a jQuery selector or a CSS selector based on the ID, if they're all named the same thing, you're gonna run into collisions. And so by using this, a unique ID, at runtime, we can actually give a target that we can hit with our code. So we've added our ID. Let's add the div for our value. So I'm gonna copy that. And I'm gonna come down here and I'm gonna put it right underneath the title. So we saw that we had the product title on the item. I'm just gonna add the new one here for the price. And we can see if we look at this, I'm setting the title of that div, and then here's the value that's gonna go into our div. I'm using those replacements again to get the JavaScript variable that we defined earlier, and I've just put the dollar sign string because I know it's a price and I want it to look nice on the screen. Last thing, I didn't really like the gray. So adding some color to this is going to be pretty easy. I happen to have predefined a JavaScript function that's going to give us a not really random, but at least rotating color that we can apply to this, make it a little bit prettier. So I'm going to make a function called a getNextOverlayColor. This is just something that I defined in my script. This isn't a helper function that we ship out of the box. And I'm just going to change the CSS class. So right here is where I said I want the black background on my item. Oops, if I can highlight it right. So there's the class name that gave me the black background. I'm going to replace that with one of my variable replacements. So I'm actually replacing the class name of the CSS class I want to use dynamically using these variable replacements the same way I would with the contents of a div. I can do this with the ID. I can do it with really anything in here, but I'm going to go ahead and do it with the CSS class. So let's take a quick look. I'm going to save that. We're not quite done yet. We wanted to have that animation to be rich so that our users can actually see some of the data. So we're going to open up the JavaScript file that I created. I linked this in with the include script function that we talked about earlier. And so in here, I've defined a couple functions. I've got a hover in and a hover out, which is just going to define what to do when the mouse goes over. Right here, we're animating two properties. We're going to animate the height and the top property so that when the mouse comes in, we're going to slide our div up. And when the mouse goes out, we're going to slide it back down. And then if you look down here, this is my color rotator that's just going to give us those neat colors that I called from the other file. The only thing I need to do in here that I've left out is actually wire up the event in my init. So my init function gets called in that onPostRender we talked about in the first demo. And so once all of the HTML is loaded, we're going to assign the hover method using the jQuery selector for the container object that I define, or the container div that I defined. So I'm going to save that. Let's go see what our last set of changes actually did for us. So we started there. We're going to refresh. Oops. And I think I hit the wrong button because my web page went away. Let's go back to the home page. Look over here. And ooh, looking a little bit better than that dark gray. That's pretty good. And when I slide the mouse over, I get the hover, and there's my price that I brought in. So I used a couple lines of code to bring in that value from the search engine. I did a couple CSS tricks and JavaScript tricks to get the color and the hover. But again, I haven't really written a lot, and I certainly haven't needed to go very deep in terms of the customization. I hit Control S over in Dreamweaver, I refresh the page, and my new template is there, the changes that I've just been making. So it's a very quick, easy way to develop these templates. So I think that's pretty cool. All right, we're making progress. Let's go back over. We'll recap. So our custom CSS works exactly the same as our custom JavaScript that we brought in. We're using this another helper function, same syntax. Our get picture markup, so we're probably working a lot with images. That's our connection to the image renditions feature that we all think is really cool and really helpful. So when we pass in the width and height, it's going to match the closest image rendition that we have. And then we're going to connect our event handler. So we connected the hover event in the onPostRender to make sure that all of the HTML elements that we want to act on are created when our event fires. And in this case, we looked at both an item template, and we did a little bit with that onPostRender for how the control template ends. So we're still working in a fairly narrow set of things to do really cool effects. And that's all well and good. So we've seen a little bit of a control template. We've seen how we get data into item templates, but how do we make them work together? You can certainly use any control and item template combination that you want. You saw in the editor, those are separate dropdowns that you can pick independently. And these are some of the out-of-the-box ones that we ship here. So there's a picture on the left, there's a picture on top. There are control templates, both for paging and not paging. The middle one there is a two-line template that's great for documents that maybe don't have thumbnails. And those are really cool. We're really happy with how those came out of the box. But when you're designing a site, You know, you've got a design in mind, you've probably got styling, you've got things that you want to work together. You want to think of those things probably as tightly coupled. And one of the cases we did this in the ones that we're shipping is the large picture and the slideshow control. So large picture is the item template that we started with to create that sliding details demo. And the slideshow is just a simple out-of-the-box slideshow control. And we designed those, the CSS, the way that they fit together to really optimize for a given scenario. You can use those templates in other combinations, but they work best together. So why don't we take a look at how we can actually do something that makes a control template and an item template that rely on each other to create something interesting. So let's go back over to our site. I was pretty happy with our staff recommendations. I mean, I don't know, I can sit here and make this, you know, wiggle all day long, and I'm pretty happy with it. We're calling this staff recommendations, and we're not really showing very much about these products, right? We've got a title and we've got a price. I think we can show a little bit more about why our staff may think that these are interesting items. So why don't we see what we can do if we create a little bit different control template that's going to lay these out differently and give us a nice anchor point for some more rich data. Let's come back over here. Let's open up another one of our files. So I've created another copy of our list control, which was the one that we started with earlier. And I've called it the preview pane. Open with Dreamweaver. And this template, I'll scroll down. This is really pretty basic. You know, I've done the same setup that I did to the other one. I've included a CSS file that brings my styles in. I've included my JavaScript file that has my external script. We're going to see what's in there a little bit later. But really, I haven't done anything else to the list. Now, the first time we looked at the list, we didn't really go into too much detail about how the list was working. We just added a style, and we called a JavaScript function, and we got the really cool animation on it. But this time we're going to look a little deeper. So there's this block here that's called the render wrapper. And the render wrapper is code that gets wrapped around each item as it comes out. So the item render result input here is the actual markup for the individual item that came back from search. And in this case, you can see we've wrapped it with a list item, and that's what goes into our unordered list down below. And that's great, it works out of the box just fine. But in my case, I wanna use divs because it's a little easier for me to lay out that way. So I'm gonna get rid of the list item definition. We're actually gonna replace that unordered list with some other code. So we don't need those list items. I'm gonna create two new elements. And the first thing I'm gonna do, I'm gonna paste in the IDs. You know, we talked about why we want unique IDs on the page, so I'm gonna create some of those. Paste those in. I got two new things. I'm going to create what I'm calling a preview pane container and a hero panel. And I'm going to paste a little bit of HTML that we're going to walk through in. So I'm just going to replace this entire unordered list. Didn't hit Control C over here. I'm going to paste that in. Okay. So this will give us a little bit different structure. We've got our container, which is going to hold the entire thing that we're rendering. We've got this hero panel. And then we've got what I'm calling the item tile container. The item tile container is where our individual item templates are going to get rendered. And the hero panel is actually with our CSS going to float to the right and give us a place that we can show more details about each item. So I think that's going to be pretty cool. It's going to let me show more details about the items as I go. Let's save that. Let's go back over. I'm going to edit the page again. Lost my login. Going to edit the page. Go over to the recommendations. We're going to edit the web part. And this time we're actually going to change the control template. So we can see here, here's our preview pane live at SPC 12. That's the template that we were just looking at. I'm going to hit OK. I'll check the page in. Let's see what we've got over here on the recommendations. All right, so our items are getting rendered a little differently. Instead of being kind of all, you know, left to right, now we've got a vertical list of them. I've got this big white space that I can do really interesting things with. I haven't yet. When I click these items, right now they're going to the details page. And that's not quite what I had in mind. I actually want to bring more of that information right on to this page here. So it's not really going to take very much for us to do that. The first thing we're going to want to do is actually go back to our item template. And so this is where we get into the part of bringing an item and a control template together. So if we look at our item sliding details, I want to bring the rich data in that we're going to use. So right where I updated the price earlier, I'm going to paste in another property here that's going to bring in some more information about our items. I'm going to add one additional CSS file. So I'm going to come down here to our script tag. I'm going to paste this in. It's going to give us another include CSS line. And this is just, I know that the data coming back from the search engine is going to use the styles that are in this file, and I want it to look the same as it would on the product details page on our front page. So that's the reason I'm bringing that in. I'm going to create a new property called the tile ID. And this is, again, it's going to be an anchor for our script code to run against. I'm just going to paste it right here underneath the encoded ID. It's just something that I know that I can count on to be there in JavaScript later on when I want to start manipulating things. So I mapped that property a second ago. Let's get its value out just like we did before. We had our price. Here's another one. So same thing, I'm calling get item value. Now I want the feature information. And here's where the magic happens. I'm gonna make a call and generate some markup myself that's gonna really tie these two things that we've been working on together. So down here, I'm just gonna paste in two things. One, I'm gonna create a link that we're going to use. So right here, I'm just defining as a string some HTML that's an anchor tag with a div in it that's gonna have a link that's gonna go to our end page. Because I'm gonna make the click on those items do something different. I still wanna let users get to the item detail page. I'm just gonna add that link in. And then I'm gonna generate some markup. I'm gonna take that link and I'm gonna add it to the value of what came back from that, the feature information. So up there, I grabbed the feature information out of search. And now I'm gonna actually take its value property and combine it with the link that I just defined to create the blob of stuff that I want to put on the right-hand side of the page. And here's where it gets interesting. If we think about the order that things are getting rendered in, all of our work so far has happened in the onPostRender event. Well, the onPostRender event is going to get fired at some time in the future after I've already gone through and run all this code. So if I want to save information about the item that I'm currently looking at, it's not going to be there when my event fires unless I do something to save it out. So I've defined a function in the JavaScript called this add preview pane content data that's actually going to save our container ID, so that's the thing that we want to anchor to, and the content markup that I just defined right here. So I'm just going to use the JavaScript as a kind of a data transfer station here. And because I'm going to be changing what happens on click, I'm going to get rid of the anchor tag that we originally had around our item. So let's just get rid of that. And we'll save that file. And let's take a look over at our script. So let's open this. All right, so this is the custom script that I wrote for this preview pane application. You can see I'm doing some interesting, I'm just saving some data out. I've defined an array at the top here of data, and that function that we just called to save the data, all it's doing is pushing the data onto an array that we can get back later on. I need a click event so that when the user clicks on my tile, I can put the information on the right-hand side. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to loop through that array that I created. I'm going to look for the ID that I stored. So I stored that container ID, which is going to be the unique ID of the item I'm looking for. And I'm going to match it with jQuery against the attribute of this object that I'm looking at. And then I'm going to set the HTML property of the hero panel, so that big white space we had on the right, I'm going to set the HTML property of that to the blob that I stored off in our JavaScript in the item template. And to make that happen, I'm just going to wire up a click handler on that event. So we're going to go, here's my init function that I wired up in the onPost render. I'm going to paste so that it's going to do two things. It's going to wire up the click event, and then I'm going to click on the first item so that I actually get some data shown the first time we're there. All right, and let's see what we've got. That saved. We'll refresh the page. We'll go over, and hey, all of a sudden that big white space has a lot of rich data about the individual products. I've got that see more information link that I created in code. And as I click through here, I get a very snappy replacement of that middle content with the content that matches the item that I am currently clicking on. So that's a really easy way to tie an item template to a control template. If I select each of these individually, they're not necessarily going to stand on their own. But if I'm doing a rich design for my site, I probably want to have a pair or two of these around that do interesting things together. Let's go back over to our slides. And I keep clicking on my own keyboard. And let's recap that. So we used our onPost render to initialize information that's not dependent on individual result data. And that's a really key point, right? When the onPost render fires, we're not going to have the individual item data. I had to use JavaScript to save it off so that my event handlers would have it later on. And another thing that didn't really come up in this demo but is important to know, all of your inputs are basically treated as strings. So if you're doing something that you expect to be a particular kind of data, like a URL or a date time or something else that you might do some processing on, it's important to validate that data type before you start processing it, because our users could remap our input. Right, we saw the users can change the property value. If they change it to something you're not expecting, you just want to make sure that your code is robust enough to handle it. And this demo was, it's about 50 lines of code, mostly for my event handlers that I wrote to do the animations and to do the looping to get that information. So I'm going to pass it back over to Ethan, who's going to talk about our search data provider.
Thanks, Jeremy. Oh, loud. All right. I'll try not to shout. So let's talk about the search data provider. I showed you guys a bit before about refiners, but I want to give you a brief peek under the covers of how this experience really works. So every content search web part on a page in every refiner has a search data provider that's driving the data, right? The search query that's behind it. And each one can have their own, or that search data provider can actually be shared between multiple different instances and different web parts. And the reason you do that is for something like this refinement experience here, where you've got a content search web part, you've got a refiner, and the way those things interact, the reason that on click of a refiner the search results end up changing is that those are actually sharing a search data provider. And so one click of the refiner, all that has to do, it doesn't have to enumerate every search content search web part in the page and force it to reload. It just has to change the context of the search data provider, and then everything else just works. So that, of course, begs the question, tell me more about interacting with the search query context in that data provider. How do I do things? So there's a bunch of different JavaScript objects you can use to do this. There's the list data objects. When all these hangs off of CTX, which is sort of a minified version of the word context. So if you've been wondering what the letters CTX are that you've seen as really quickly scroll by in a bunch of demos, that's about to change, but stands for context. And there's a few objects. There's the list data object that shows you all of the query results. And you could, if you wanted to, use this directly if you had your own jQuery or other plugin that would rather have the data in JSON format and not in the HTML format the display template turns it into. You can interact with that data earlier and pass it that way. Similarly, for current item, in an item display template, if you want to do the same thing, that'll give you the data for the current item being rendered. And lastly, there's the client control object. And the client control object, sort of like its name implies, allows that client-side code to control what search is actually doing. So you could use it for paging, you could use it for sorting, you could even use it for infinite scrolling, which is what I'm going to show you. So let's switch over to a quick demo. So picture this. You are the web designer of Contoso Electronics, and the good news is ever since your company adopted SharePoint 2013, you've been delighting your bosses because you built some amazing looking stuff. It's actually easier than ever was before, but you haven't quite told them that. So you just get to work less hours. It's great. But the bad news is, now that you've done this, their expectations have gone up. And it turns out the marketing manager for the camera department's been searching around on the web. They've seen some sites like Pinterest, right, where that have this infinite scrolling semantic, whereas as I scroll to the bottom of Pinterest, more stuff just keeps on coming, including some terrible movies. And so to learn how to do this, sorry, I guess I shouldn't editorialize. Personal opinion, not Microsoft's official position on the movie Norbit. And of course, as I wanted to learn this, I tried to find a good example of this, and it's being the day after the Bon Jovi concert. I looked at Bing Images, which it turns out does the same thing. As you scroll around, more and more pictures of Bon Jovi just keep on appearing. Which, if you liked the show last night, is great. If not, we'll just switch to something else. So, I've looked at those pages, and it turns out I've uncovered the secret of how infinite scrolling works that I'm going to share with you now. It turns out that all of these pages are, in fact, just search-driven pages. And there is a hidden div behind the scenes where searches are happening, right? Where every time I scroll to the bottom, whereas in most search experiences, when you hit next page, it just redraws the next page. In this case, that hidden div is actually getting new items. And there's JavaScript on this page that just keeps appending those to the bottom instead of replacing. So in a nutshell, that's how infinite scrolling works. And the good news is now that we've seen how display templates work, we can fairly quickly go ahead and add that. So let me show you what I'm going to do here. I'm going to throw this page into edit mode. This being a category page created through cross-site publishing, it has a content search web part. The web part's query has actually got a bunch of cool things going on. That's the reason why there's only one of these category pages, and yet when I go to cameras, it shows me cameras, and when I go to other categories, it shows me other categories, because the query itself is hooked up in some really cool ways. But of course, for today, we're just going to talk about the display template. And behind the scenes, to get us started, I created a new control display template called Infinite Scrolling that we're going to apply now. It doesn't do anything yet, because I actually wanted to create this live for you, because it actually is that easy. So let me save this page, let me check it in. And again, so far it looks exactly the same, right? I scroll to the bottom, wait for it, nothing. But we're going to change that. So let me show you the infinite scrolling template that we've made, which I've got right here. This is a copy of the standard control list template you've seen a few times, but full disclosure, I changed the title. I did include one extra script to this helper function, infinitescrollinghelper.js. So we're going to look at that in a second. And down here at the bottom of the file, as you've seen several times, I've added an on-post render, right, callback, to this infinite scrolling helper function, which does nothing. And that's why infinite scrolling isn't working yet. But let's go ahead and make that a bit more real. So the first thing I'm going to do, as we talked about before, is that I know that to make this infinite scrolling behavior work, what I want to do is take this CBS list where the results are actually getting rendered, and I'm going to hide it. Right, so we're going to go ahead and give this an ID so we can reference it later. And we're going to use a bit of a hack by doing an inline CSS. But now, that actual div is not going to show. Again, you could reference external CSS files just in the interest of time. And now what I'm going to do behind the scenes is in my infinite scrolling helper, I've got a bit of JavaScript that we're going to go ahead and paste in. Let's get this into a bigger font so I can tell you what we're doing. All right, so all this is doing, I'm going to make a new div if I need to in JavaScript, right? So try to access a variable. If I don't have the div on the page, I'm going to create it. And then down here, I'm going to use some simple jQuery to select that hidden div. I'm going to iterate through each item, and I'm going to clone that node into the visible results, right? So far, nothing too complicated. In fact, if I went back to the display template and showed it to you on the page, it would look exactly the same. Only difference being I'm doing one extra copy of that data from those hidden results into those visible results.
So,
nothing so fancy yet. But the next thing I'm going to want to do is handle that scrolling event, right? The first thing you're going to have, or the next thing I need to do with my infinite scrolling is I have to know when you're at the bottom of the page, because that's when I want to fetch more items. So it turns out all I have to do for that, let me grab this little bit of, not go ahead and cheat to the end. So I've got a bit of JavaScript here that I'm going to quickly copy and paste. And so I'm going to go back to my init function. And down below where we got this visible div, I'm going to add this. So what are we doing here? Some fairly standard jQuery. I'm going to take the S4 workspace object, which I happen to know in SharePoint is the ID of the entire page. I'm going to register on the scroll events. I'm going to calculate the current scroll position whenever we scroll by just summing up the height, the scroll top position and the height. And I'm going to check to see, is that the bottom of the page, right? Does the sort of my current position lower than the bottom? And that's where I would go in and do my search context updating. So everything I've shown you so far, purely standard jQuery, so we could get to this moment. So all I need to do is grab this little bit of JavaScript here. Oh, and I'll reload the file. Thanks, Dreamweaver. Okay. So all I need to do here is I take the line that says this is where the magic happens, which is clearly not out of the box, though the product itself is quite magical. And here's what we're doing. So the first thing I do, I use the CTX client control helper function for get paging info, which is going to tell me what page of results am I on. And I'm going to check if this is the last page, right? And then if there is more data, because I don't want to keep doing search queries even when I run out of cameras, I'm going to use this one line, which is really the entire reason I built this demo for you. This one line, which is I'm going to use the page method of the client control, and I'm going to page to the very next page of results. So that's it. Now that I've got that done, hit save on my helper function, hit save on my template, refresh the page. Oh, let me clear off any query parameters. All right, refresh the page. We'll make sure it's published. Great. And now, as I scroll to the bottom, I see my six cameras, but just like that, wait for it. All right. I have a line break problem. Line 40, oh, I love it. Oh, thank you. Damn my verbose comments. Results, save. All right, let's check in the page. All right, let's scroll to the bottom. And just like that, more cameras, infinite cameras. All right. Whoever helped me out in the audience, please come up after. I want to thank you and buy you a beer to ask the experts, which you should all come to tonight. All right, so quick recap of what we did. Overall, how this works, we hid the actual query results. So those were rendered into a hidden UL. We used an on-post render event to copy those into the visible one. And then we registered our scroll handle events. And because in that event, we update the search query context, that actually informs the entire display template that I have to call on post render again. I have to re-render because the search context has changed. So again, I didn't have to do a lot of work in that event to say, please redraw. I just said, change the number of items, and the display template framework did the rest for me. It actually was only about 18 lines of code if you don't count line breaks and comments, including the one that almost broke the demo. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeremy Kelly to take you through the refiner model.
All right. Okay. Refiners, as Ethan showed us earlier, are the controls on the left-hand edge of our category pages that allow us to filter the results from our search. So I think we had a color picker on there. There's probably a price picker on there. And out of the box, the ones that we ship you are basically text. And text isn't all that interesting, so you probably want to be able to customize them, and you might be wondering how. Well, the cool thing about refiners is that they use the search context that Ethan just told us about. So there's a couple cool things that are a result of that. One, our content search display templates just work. So if you've written a custom display template, you don't have to be concerned at all about whether or not it's going to work with refiners. It just will. Because all the refiners are doing is modify that search query much the same way that Ethan modified it for the infinite scrolling demo. So that's one thing that you don't have to worry about as you're building them. The next thing that they do is the refiners are mapped to refinable search managed properties. And if you go to the search sessions, they'll probably talk a little bit more about that detail. But suffice it to say, you need to mark the properties that you're interested in as refinable. Then you'll add the refinement panel web part to your page or your page layout. And then you configure that web part to use to a particular property, or you might be configuring faceted navigation to preset the refiners in a catalog connection. There's a whole lot of like really complicated terms that I just threw out at you. My hope is that they will spark your interest enough to learn a little bit more about them. They're really search details that for the purposes of making them look cool, we don't really need to know all that much about. So let's see what a cool refiner might look like. And I am a fan of doing things in color. You saw earlier, I liked to make the color over here rotate a little bit. So let's take a look at our audio category here. And you can see I've got a lot of audio products in a lot of different colors, but that is not what I expect a modern color picker to look like. So with our custom refiners, we can actually make that look a little better. And I promise, or unfortunately, this is going to be a little bit of a tease because I'm not going to go into the code behind this demo, primarily because we're getting close to the end of the hour. But you'll come away with the fact that these are still display templates, and they use the same model that we've been looking at all day long for how they work. They're still a control template. They're still item templates. They're just called refiners. So if I go in here to the properties that were on that refinement web part, I can see the properties that I'm refining by. So in this case, I've got the color property, and down here it says which template that I want to use for that. And the default is refinement item. I went ahead and built my own color refiner because I thought the color would be a lot more interesting. So I'm going to select that. I'm going to hit OK. I'm going to hit OK here. And whoa, all of a sudden, my big long list of text refiners is now in color. So I'm just going to check this in so we get a little bit more vertical space. Publish the draft. And as I click through here, I'm going to get back the items that match the data that I just selected. So I picked red. I can clear this out. I can pick, I think that's actually Microsoft yellow, which looks a little orange to me, but I don't argue with marketing people. So I clear that refiner. In all honesty, it took me a couple hours to build that color refiner template. There's not much more code than we've seen in the other sessions. We're going to be posting a blog post soon after SharePoint conference where we'll go into a little bit more detail. We're going to give you a starting template that you can use that's going to be great for working with refiners. I apologize we're not showing the code now, but I think you're probably, hopefully, have some questions for us. So let's quickly recap important points about refiners. They're just display templates, so everything we've already learned about using jQuery, about using CSS, just applies. And one detail, refinement data is only returned for values that are present in the result set. So you saw as I clicked through my colors, I grayed out the other colors that weren't in the data. That's because the refiner isn't telling me about the other colors that could be there. So I had to do a little bit of design magic to know ahead of time what colors my products were going to be and set that up. And that's really all we need for refiners. Same technology as everything else. And I'll throw it back to Ethan.
Thanks. So I will say, if anyone wants to ask questions, there's microphone. I feel like a stewardess. There's microphones here and here. Please do walk up. We'll hang out until they kick us out, and we'll both be at Ask the Experts. I did want to say a few things. Firstly, other sessions at SharePoint Conference, this being close to the end, many of these you should think of as recordings you should really go watch. But I will quickly plug the bottom one tomorrow morning that I'm presenting. About website architecture, where we're actually going to teach a lot about how all the different design elements, rendering elements, search elements fit together. Assuming you can drag yourself out of bed that early, I think it will really be worth your time. There's hands-on labs as well. There's Ask the Experts tonight. And one other thing I did want to mention, Please use the MySPC app. Please give feedback. To prove to you how important it is, one of the big bits of feedback we got at the 2009 SharePoint conference was you guys didn't do enough in web content management. And this year, there's been years of innovation and a whole web track. So we take your feedback incredibly seriously. If that's not enough motivation for you, the speakers are actually competing to get top scores. So if you liked what you saw, please post feedback. I have a running side bet with another presenter that I really want to win. It would mean a lot to me. So please do. If you like the session, please give feedback. If not, please come up and send an email. And that would be great. So we'll hang out and take any questions you guys have. And thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the conference.